any questions, you can just throw this one. It's a microphone.
Dear committee, dear all other audience, welcome to the doctoral trial lecture by the candidate Ferdinand Degen. My name is Terje Stafseng. I'm head of section at Department of Media Technology, and I will conduct this defense. This trial lecture is part of the dissertation defense, and before the final defense can take place, this trial lecture need to be approved up front. If the upon approval at 12:30 today, the candidate will go on with his with his defense. Before leaving the podium to Ferdinand, I would just give you a brief presentation of the assessment committee. The first external opponent is Professor Robert Sitnik from Warsaw University of Technology in Poland. The second external opponent is Professor Olivier Collomb, University of Lille in France. And our internal opponent and also administrator of the committee, it's Professor Phil Green. He's from the Faculty of Computer Science and Media Technology here at NTNU Gjøvik. Well, the title of Ferdinand's defense is Contribution to Spectral and 3D Imaging Technology for Cultural Heritage Application. So please, Ferdinand, the podium is yours.
So, good morning, everyone. I'm not starting with my thesis, but I'm starting with the trial lecture. The topic that was given to me is current challenges in 3D color image processing. And let's get right into it. I will skip the agenda for right now, go directly into the introduction, and we'll talk a little bit about the agenda in a minute. So, 3D color image processing. When we first think about color image processing, we have an acquisition setup, we all know about this, and we have image processing that we think of demosaicing, which means bringing the half image from the green, blue and red, how we acquired it together. It's called demosaicing. We have gamma correction, and we have further enhancements, noise reduction, edge enhancements. So this is what we are thinking of when we have color image processing. When we're looking at 3D image processing, there's usually a scanner. There are different technologies, active, passive scanners. But they're usually capturing the object from one side. And these different views, these different scans, they have to be aligned. They have to be merged together to a full object. And there are different steps that be taken into place. Mesh integration, compensation for line and side errors. This is what happens in 3D image processing. But when we bring these two together, like color 3D image processing, there come a lot new questions. So this is just one image that I took from an NVIDIA presentation from 2014. And it's a realistic photorealistic rendering. And what does this separate from a photo? I could also go there and take a photo of this car. But what is the difference when there's a photorealistic rendering? What is when I bring 3D and color together? So, first of all, I'm expecting when I'm in 3D, I'm expecting to change the view. So my view is not fixed in like in color imaging, but I'm expecting to go around. And here in this car, I see a lot of effects. I see like mirroring here in the backside door. So the color that you see here on the object is not actually the color from the car, but it's the color that comes from the background and gets reflected onto the camera. But when I move my viewpoint, then this is on different angles. So when having a look at 3D and color, it is also important to have a look at the material appearance and the properties, how this light is reflected, and how this interacts with the color and with the 3D, how this all comes together in an image processing part. So this topic was given to me 2 weeks ago, just the title. And before going into this presentation now in detail, I want to give you a short focus in how I interpreted this topic and what I'm going to present to you now. So first of all, 3D and color, I will also always look at it together, combined. Because the challenge arises if you bring 3D and color together. It's if you look at this separately, all these problems that I just showed in this image, they don't arise really. Second is image processing. So I will make a short background also. And usually image processing does not include acquisition and it does not include rendering. So it's the part in between. However, as it's all about trying to model, trying to find a good model that represents the 3D and the color, I will also go a little bit into acquisition and I will also go a little bit into rendering. That's not the focus of this talk, but I will talk about acquisition and rendering with a focus in image processing. So having image processing the major part, but also going a little bit into acquisition and into rendering. Lastly, current challenges. What are current challenges? So mainly these are challenges that are not yet solved. So open things, where in the moment is research done. I had a look at several publications, and I focused myself on publications from the last 5 years. Also, it includes some background that goes 20 years back. But I'm focusing here to present you challenges that are really state of the art, that are current challenges. Lastly, when I put this phrase like this, 3D color image processing into like Google Scholar or anything like that, then the results were not that good. Because when you talk about color image processing and a 3D transformation, in many titles of the papers, it's a 3D transformation in color space. So you transform from one color space into another color space, which is a 3D transformation. But this is not what I want to talk to you about today. So these are some of the phrases that I actually used when I did my research. I had a long look into material appearance. So when you bring 3D and color together, the material, it makes a difference if I have a look at a wooden object or a metal object, and how this material appear in a 3D color representation. This was a long look. Many of this plays in the field, in the domain of computer graphics. So the publications are published in forum of computer graphics. BRDF, it's a bidirectional reflectance distribution function. It's one of the most famous ways to describe interaction of light scattering on a surface. So having all this in mind, I now want to go a little bit into the agenda. So introduction, I already did. I want to make a short introduction, give you a background on light scattering, what effects to take there into account, a little bit also about the physics, about the optics, what happens there, a short introduction. Then talk about material appearance, what is the current research there, where's the field heading, what models are they used to reliably use this describe materials. I go shortly into acquisition and rendering. As said before, focuses here on the image processing part. And then many of the publications, when they go into 3D, they make a simplified view on color. So color is always like a little bit left apart. So you have these RGB colors, and you assume that RGB, there's no effect in it. So in the last point, I want to go beyond this color limitation and show you a little bit of the current research that is done in multispectral and 3D, also hyperspectral in 3D, to go there a little bit more into depth into the color. So light scattering, you have this simple views, you have a diffuse reflection, flat surface, light enters a surface and it's reflected in all angles equally. You can apply the Cosine law. Another simple model is a mirror, so all light gets reflected directly in the same angle. Incident and accident angle is the same. You don't actually see the surface, but you just see what is the background. But most objects have a glossy, so they are in between diffuse and a mirror, and this is where you have to have a closer look into light scattering. So having some just examples of materials and how light interacts with a surface, you have often microstructures. So this will also be in the course of this talk a recurring topic, that in the scale, that if you have these small microstructures, you have little shadows, and this is how a material really looks and how it reflects light. You have isotropic surfaces. So here, when you turn this metal, when you rotate it, then it looks completely different. So the reflection depends also on the viewing, how you view on the object. You have transcattering, so light gets through an object, you see a little bit of the structure of this object. You have a lot of micro structures, so really these fine little structures that give you the feeling that this is actually a cotton object and this is hair. A lot of detailed things that can happen when light interacts with matter. One of the most general functions that's always assumed to be is this general 12-dimensional function. This is when you see light enters at one point, it leaves at another point. The angle and is it can be different, the ingoing and the outgoing angle. In this general function, the way how the light is going in the object is not described. So it's just describing the entering point and the leaving point. It's also described in two dimensions, so if you want to use this general function to describe light, you also assume to have knowledge on the 3D surface. So how this 3D is actually built is required to use this function. It also applies time, so ingoing and outgoing time is there described, and it describes two wavelengths. So this is also this is now from a slide from Stanford from 2000. This taxonomy it's in many publications in different shades, where this 12-dimensional function is always described as the most general case. So this is how light interacts with matter, and then you can simplify, you can reduce it, you can ignore this time dependency. Then you cannot describe phosphorescence. You can assume independent wavelengths. Then you cannot describe fluorescence. And in a really early stage, they go to discrete wavelengths. So they make only RGB. They assume that we have only three wavelengths. So this is in a very early stage a limitation in color. And then there are all these limitations that you take away the transcattering. Here's this BRDF I showed you in the beginning, where you assume that light enters and leaves at the very same spot. And then you can simplify it even further, ignore anisotropic surfaces, and go to one-dimensional and zero-dimensional descriptions. And often when we have in color, we are down there. So when we look into color, we often assume diffuse reflectance. So this is what we often do. And here you see like a little bit this taxonomy of these functions. Again, scale. If you have a diffuse reflectance on a larger scale, it is diffuse. But if you look in the details, then you see microfacets that really describe the light distributing in different angles. Also, when you look more into details, this is the color pigment, for instance. If your light is entering and it's get absorbed certain wavelengths and other wavelengths get reflected. So if this is, for instance, a red pigment, then the red light gets reflected and it looks red. But if you look into more details, then you might even like describe how light is entering the surface. You have micro shadowing, micro masking. These are these little effects that I have shown before. Some of the physical properties, I don't want to go too much into this detail, but what is often used is this Helmholtz reciprocity principle, which basically states that it does not really matter if you go from the light source to the camera or if you go from the camera to the light source. So you can travel both ways, and it makes easier to model it and to have it a 3D and color rendering. Also, one of these effects that has to be taken into account is the Fresnel effect. In metal objects, for instance, the power which is reflected and transmitted is more or less equal on all the angles. But if you have a non-conductive material, dielectric, a plastic ball, then it makes a difference the angle on which you look onto the surface. And here you see, for instance, this white little shadow around this ball, and this makes it look natural. So the color changes with the 3D surface. Okay, this was really short introduction. I showed you some of the effects. Next I want to go is directly these material appearances. So what are the current challenges here? What is currently done there? And again, it affects color and 3D image processing, because with these models you can model the 3D and the color simultaneously. Currently there are like three major fields in which this appearance in the in material appearance is modeled. It's phenomenological based models. They're basically describing what you see. They're describing a diffuse reflectance. For instance, a Phong model is a phenomenological based model. So it describes the effect to the observer. Second group that has done a lot of research is physically based models. They really just try to describe the physical properties of the surface. They often take into account these microfacets that I showed you before. They take into account the geometry. They take into account the Fresnel effect. So this is a second group of models that are used to describe the 3D and color properties. And lastly, there's data-driven models. So when you acquire this, then you have also a lot of degrees of freedom. So you can move the light source, you can move the camera, you can move the object. There are a lot of degrees of freedom that you bring in. And after this data acquisition, the first thing that you have is a lookup table. And a lookup table occupies a lot of space. And the data-driven models, this is an attempt to simplify the acquired data. So they're coming from the data and derive models to better use the data. So this is an overview of phenomenological-based BRDF models. I don't want to go too much into details, but isotropic, anisotropic, you see this reciprocity, Helmholtz reciprocity, you see energy constancy, Fresnel effect, and more or less the last new models from 2007, they try to put in all these effects. They try to model on a phenomenological based basis, try to model all effects and yeah. Second is physically based model, same layout. You see a lot of work in isotropic, anisotropic work. The current work, what there's also be taken into account, what I have not talked in the first is absorption. So when you talk in this 12-dimensional function, how light interacts with matter, of course light gets also absorbed. It's not all the light gets reflected. So this is one of the things that is nowadays also be taken into account in physically based models. It also allows spatially varying BRDFs if you have different materials, and this allows to describe difficult surfaces, glittery surfaces. This is a lot of some of the current work is done in data-driven models. For instance, there is a work from Ward. He uses a tensor tree to describe BSDF data a better way than lookup table. So I wanted to also bring this to a more plastic view, so to give you a better feeling what this means actually. And this is a paper from last year, from 2015. And it's a physical model for fur. So if you look at this animal, and this is a really challenging material, because I mean the color of this animal, it is really distinguished, and how can this model be used to describe it? And this is a physically based model, and it's in comparison to a phenomenological based model. So this Marschner paper, who he most compares his work to, it's from 2003, so it's a little distance, time distance to it. And this physically based model, it describes two types of fur, so the inner fur and the outer fur, and it's also used for acquisition, it is used for modeling, and it is used for rendering. For the whole processing chain, a physically based model is used And these are the current challenges, that there's a lot of challenging materials, and there's work to find models to describe the material appearance. In this paper from Guarnera, it's a really recent paper, it's from May 2016 actually, he summarized the challenges that I have put into this section in a more specific way, to say what are the current work. There's so many models, but what is actually the current challenge there? So one of the challenges is that all these solutions, they're not widely adapted. So there are many solutions, but few of these solutions, they have a wide range of application that you can use in many applications, or that you can also use in commercial applications. Maybe a little bit similar to this is that there's a current challenge is to find a standardization for materials from acquisition setup to the modeling, and which also allows all these properties, there's a subset of properties, to find a good way to describe a subset of material. So if you have a material, to find a certain subset and find a model according to the subset of properties that you're looking for. The next thing, when I talked about color image processing, there's in photography, there's a lot of work in Photoshop that you enhance the edges. The same thing is you want to do with 3D and color. So one of the challenges today is that the materials, they are really hard to edit by artists. So you get this data and you want to tweak it a little bit, change a little bit the color, change a little bit the appearance. And the material descriptions today, they are not yet open for this, that it's easy also for artists to work with it. And last but not least, it's a high memory footprint. So if you describe all these different effects, then you have a really high memory footprint. Okay, so acquisition. I'm talking now a little bit about the acquisition of 3D and color. And again, focus is here finding to fit into these models. So this 3D and color acquisition, it poses many challenges. So actually I could do another talk like this just about the acquisition part. There is challenges to acquire this 3D accurately, to acquire the BRDF accurately. Many of the problems are about freedoms, degrees of freedom. So you need to move around the light source. Many of this work, they assume that you already know in detail the 3D structure before measuring the BRDF. So it's really first knowing the 3D structure, and then you're allowed or able to measure, go further. So this Gonio reflectometer, this is one of the standard effects for acquisition. In terms of the data representation, it goes again back to this scale issue that I brought in the background chapter. So this is a paper from 2011. And if you have a 3D scene, then many surfaces, they look flat. But if you go closer, then they're not flat at all. So they have these little micro scale structures. And what in this paper was done, for instance, they found a model to describe surfaces, especially glossy surfaces, in a dual scale way. So if you have here a mirror, then this is what they call the mesoscale. So everything what is in the mirror, the background scene, and they have additionally the microscale. So it is this bumpy mirror surface that has this effects and reflection, and if you bring them both together, so a combination of meso and micro scale is what is actually used in this model. Another challenge is large surfaces, acquiring them, and bringing them also together. So this is one of the projects from Vasov, and they used one framework, frames, to manage this whole process. And one of the challenges is that the light and the color representation, it is not uniform. So when you acquire several patches or several different views of a surface, and you see a misalignment in the illumination, you see a misalignment in the color. And this is one challenge. If you have these different scales, if you have these really large surfaces that you want to acquire, but the acquisition setup is made for really a detailed focus, so you cannot acquire everything in one step, but you have to acquire it in little patches to have it uniform and to work with large surfaces. Similar here, this is the one in this post-processing. So if you have finished the acquisition and you're going into an image processing, so aligning these different views, then color can also be a clue. So you can also use color, for instance, in merging point clouds to use not only the structure, but also using the color features to find the best possible merge in the point clouds. Good. Rendering. So first is I talked about how these materials is described. Acquisition side is how to get these models into the computer to work with them, and rendering is the output side. So how do I get these images back on the screen? One of the current or one of the long-lasting efforts, it's also my background, it's Monte Carlo methods. Monte Carlo methods is the idea to use a random sample, and it is made for this BRDF model. So you have a BRDF simulation, and you can simulate light, and using this BRDF models and walk through it and simulate it by using random samples. Also, this Helmholtz reciprocity, it allows you to walk both ways. So it allows you to simulate from the camera source what is actually acquired, but it also allows you to walk the other way from the light source to the surface and back to the camera. One of the problems there is that they are really time-intensive calculations. So if you try to simulate all the light sources and you want to have a realistic model, then this is not a time of instant visualization as we are used to maybe in color image processing, but it takes a lot of time. And so this realistic, photorealistic rendering, it is a question of days, of hours and days, so it's a really long-term simulation. And these are some of the recent advances here in Monte Carlo rendering. So the idea is to use the sampling adaptive to the scene. So look at the scene and try to save some computational power because you know already a little bit about the scene. And there are two fields that are currently being used, investigated. It's a priori methods. They use a higher model to save some computational time. For instance, the local frequency analysis, it's basically Nyquist. Light field structure, this is where the most effort is done. It's having few samples and extrapolating afterwards. A posteriori methods a posteriori methods, they use a different approach, which is also closer to image processing. So they first make a really rough rendering, Monte Carlo rendering, and the outcome is always a noisy image. So if you use too few samples in a Monte Carlo, you get a noisy image. And then they use image processing to improve later on where to use more samples. So these are two examples. I picked out two papers, again from the last 5 years, to show you a little bit here the what is done here. If you have a priori methods, this is one framework that uses a lot of these methods, and that also allows to make even more realistic effects, camera effects, for instance, depth of field, indirect illumination. Here, this is these a posteriori methods. As I said before, you have an initial sample with a noisy image. Then you apply a family of different filters, image processing on the 2D image. Then you know an error, so you know per pixel more or less where to put in more rays, where to increase the intensity. And then this is the outcome is to say, where do I need additional samples? Where do I improve the quality? So what are the current challenges in Monte Carlo rendering? So these are these two approaches, a priori, a posteriori, should be merged. And one challenge is to make it faster, to also go a little bit into real-time rendering, to have high-quality real-time rendering, which allows a whole number of different applications. That's what it was in the paper. I was okay. A different topic about rendering, which is which I thought is interesting. So I picked out one paper. It's non-photorealistic rendering. So this is what we often do in color or in spectral imaging. Is we have this huge amount of data, but we want to emphasize a certain characteristics. For instance, in cultural heritage, we want to help the restorers to easily find certain effects in the image. And similar things are possible in 3D. So this is a toon shading, and what is supposed to be a realistic rendering, it's a Phong model, it turns into a more cartoonish visualization that emphasizes only the structures, how it is used. And I think it has a lot of applications in many different fields where also color and 3D could be combined to actually help users to work with the data and to make a focus on especially salient areas of the image. Okay, so last area, it's multimodal 3D and multispectral models. So, as I said before, the color is discarded in a really early stage. So, in this taxonomy, in like the first step, you go down from wavelengths and only take into account RGB images. So, having these three images that afterwards are combined to one RGB image. 3D and multispectral, there's a lot of work that has been done. This is one paper. It focuses on the acquisition. It synchronizes or aligns the acquisition setup. The same acquisition setup is used for the 3D and the multispectral, and some external tracking cameras locate the position of the camera in the target frame. Similar, there's some work done with 3D and hyperspectral images, again for this image acquisition of 3D and the spectral part. The same camera is used. This image looks a little bit ugly. It's a medical application, and what is this used? It is an open wound on a foot. So they're making a 3D and a hyperspectral image acquisition here, use the same camera setup. Going beyond this multimodal 3D to also include the shape, the color, and the BRDF, there is some also in Warsaw, some of the work done currently. It is some really complicated setups which take all these information into account, which take into account the spectral part, which take into account the glossiness, the BRDF model, which also take into account a 3D structure. And if you have a look at here at the processing part, we have separate processing of the point cloud, of the spectral characteristic, and of the angular characteristic. And the color, it is transformed here to an independent color space. It's this CLAP and sRGB afterwards for visualization. And for the angular characteristics, a Phong model is applied. So as I mentioned before, it's a phenomenological based model that has been applied here. Good. So summarize a little bit of the challenges. There are many challenging materials. So you have glossy materials, you have skin, fur, biological materials, and all these materials pose current questions, current challenges in the acquisition side, in the image processing side, and in the rendering. And the same models are used for all this, and one challenge is to find find good models to describe here the material appearance. Another question or challenge is the data representation. So if you have all these different datas, how can you represent it? How can you store it together with the measurement? Different challenge that I positioned in various stages, it's the scale. So if you have a really close up at the 3D and the color, then you get a different impression than what you get in a larger scale. So combining different scales, also maybe employing multi-scale models, I think it's a challenge in 3D, and it's a challenge in this 3D color image processing. And lastly, it is this combining a good color model that also includes spectral information, multispectral information, with a higher level BRDF model. So bringing all this together, I think it's one of the challenges, current challenges. Okay. So then, thank you very much. I see that I really finished 7 minutes too early. I'm sorry about that. But I talk too fast, I guess.
Thank you very much, Ferdinand, for an interesting lecture. Are there any questions? Does the committee have any questions to the trial lecture?
Yeah.
And what? Yeah, please.
So, do you consider to include into your presentation the dome technology? Because as far as I know, there are the attempts in Belgium to multispectral dome, they publish a paper.
This all RTI technology?
Yes, RTI, but with multispectral. So from
okay.
RTI you could reconstruct the geometry.
Yes.
If you have multispectral illumination acquisition, then you
yes. I definitely. So there are many different acquisition setups that are done. Also, when you have this dome into account, then there is like shape from shading that can be used to capture the 3D. I did not focus on the acquisition side, so I know that the acquisition, it poses many problems, or many approaches to do it. there's to move this spectra multispectral camera, to use fringe projection, to combine hyperspectral, which is a line projection, and using this 3D. So there are different acquisition setups that are positioned on many sites. I know that it could fill another presentation, but more on the acquisition setup focused.
There will be a decision regarding approval of the trial lecture. This decision is, of course, taken by the committee. And it will be announced here in C007 at 12:30. If approved, the candidate will proceed with his public presentation defense immediately. So I hope to see you all here back in the room. Thank you.